because, you know, we're sojourners. We're pilgrims on this earth. You know, we're not at home here. Our treasures are in heaven. Jesus has told us that. We've got a crown up there, and meanwhile, we're struggling here on earth. But, you know, that's the story. That's the story of mankind, and it's not just Christians that suffer, you know. It's a lot of people suffer on this earth. So I want to read to you today. We're going to talk about a Gideon who was a great warrior, but he didn't know it. He didn't know it. He came from a poor family. He was a coward, believe it or not. Gideon was a coward. And I'll tell you why in a minute. We're going to go to the book of Judges, chapter 6. And starting at verse 1, I'll give everybody a chance if you want to get there. It says here, "Then the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord gave him into the hands of Midian 7 years. The power of the Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of Midian, the sons of Israel made for themselves dens and caves, which were in the mountains, and the caves and the strongholds. For it was what Israel had sown, when they had made their crops, were all ready to pick them up. Then the Midianites would come up with the Amalekites," I think that's how you say it, "and the sons of the east, and go against them. So they would camp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza, and leave no substance in Israel as no sheep, ox, or donkey. For when they came up with their livestock and their tents, they would come on like locusts for number. Both they and their camels were innumerable, and they came into the land to devastate it. So Israel was brought low because of Midian, and the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord." So kind of let's look at this picture, what we're seeing here, okay? The history of Israel, as we went through verse 10, we see here that they had abandoned God. How many times we read about that in the Old Testament? They had abandoned God. Even Christians abandoned God. But here we read about where they had abandoned God. They began idolatry. They were impoverished. Where was God? Where were all these blessings, so to speak? They were persecuted and powerless. So it says in verse 2, they had to hide in caves in fear of the Midianites attacking each year and taking their crops. So you can imagine this great army. They came up with their tents, with their livestock, with their camels. They weren't just an army going in here. This was their, they were taking over everything. They came and they planned to stay. So the Israelites, you know, what are they going to do? They're hiding out in the caves. They're hiding on the high mountains. So they will be left alone because they wouldn't only just take their livestock and their produce. They would take their families, their children, and the men they bring them back as slaves, you know. As I kind of look at this, I think about this army coming in. I think about pictures of the Second World War. In 1932, Hitler came into power, and he developed this humongous army, nobody knowing it. He wasn't allowed to. After the First World War, the armistice, he wasn't allowed to do any of this kind of stuff. But he built this humongous navy, this powerful air force, and this tremendous army. And what he developed is what we call, Blitzkrieg. Okay, my German's not too good. Although I'm half German, you wouldn't know it. But anyways, this Blitzkrieg, which is like a lightning army. And then in 1939, he slowly amassed his whole army against Poland, against the Polish border. And in one day, this whole army took off into Poland. And within 6 days, Poland was totally devastated. There was very little resistance left. They were just so overpowered. And this is what I'm seeing here with Midian. His armies are just coming in, and there's nothing that is going to stop them, this army that he had. So this had been happening for 7 years now, so we read, okay? If we read a little bit further now, we go from verse 7. It says, "Now it came about when the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord about Midian, that the Lord sent the prophet to the sons of Israel, and he said to them, Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, it was I who brought you up from Egypt and brought you out from the house of slavery. I delivered you from the hands of the Egyptians and from the hands of your oppressors, and I disposed them before you and gave you their land. And I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You shall not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are, but you did not obey me. You have not obeyed me. He sent them into that land. God told them, you're going to take this land, and they didn't. So what happened over a period of time, they not only forgot about the Lord, they inherited, like we read so many times in the Bible, the idolatry, the paganism of the lands that they had gone into. And we see this happen once again, okay? So they were like in a really bad situation. It was a sorry lot. God told them what was going on. The prophet went in there, told them what you had done wrong. And apparently, I don't think it made a whole lot of sense to them. Because then as we go a little bit further, we go down to verse 11. We start reading about our friend Gideon now. So Gideon, it says here, then the angel of the Lord came and he sat under the oak that was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, and his son. Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press in order to save it from the Midianites. So what we're seeing here now is he's not down on the threshing floor like they should be, beating out the wheat for the chaff. He's hiding up in the mountains. He'd go out into the field, he'd grab a handful, maybe had people with him, and they'd bring this back up into the mountain where the wine press was. That's where they would beat these things out. So he was afraid as much as anybody. So anyways, we go down to verse 11. It says, then the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak tree. I'm sorry, I jumped down to number 12. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, O valiant warrior. There it is, little Gideon. Now, mind you, Gideon came from a very poor family. He goes on to say a little bit later that they were the lesser family in Israel. He was kind of a shepherd. Shepherds were always the youngest son, remember David? This was the job that nobody else wanted anymore. The youngest kids, the youngest girl washes the dishes or whatever. This is the way it was. So he was, you know, the lowest person here. And once again, we're going to see as we read on about our friend Gideon, you know, how God just always chooses those, okay? So the angel of the Lord comes up and he says, O mighty man of the Lord. And I'm picturing Gideon now, and I'm saying he's kind of like, you know, the Robert De Niro, you talking to me? You must be talking to me because I'm the only one here. And forgive me, Lord. You talking to me. So he goes on. When we get down here to chapter 16, it says here, then Gideon said to him, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian. The Lord looked at him and said, go in your strength and deliver Israel from the hand from the Midianites. I have sent you. And he said to him, O Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house. But the Lord said to him, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat Midian as one man. So here we have the guy questioning, you know, well, who am I? Why me? You know, why me, God? Okay? And we see this kind of personality throughout the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, even in the New Testament. I think immediately, Adam. What happened with Adam when God said to him, what have you done? What did he say? That woman that you gave me. I've heard that within the last 15 years too. That woman that you gave me. Adam was right away, you know, oh, not me, but her, blame her. Anyway, and of course we have Moses. Moses was famous in Exodus 3. It was like, with Moses, it was one excuse after another. Here was a guy that was a prince of Egypt. That had grown up in a castle, that was a educated man, was a smart man. And he was, you know, at this point now hiding with his father-in-law tending sheep because of he was fearful to go back to Egypt because he would be slain. So we see Moses, and what, here we have one excuse after another. Number one, I can't speak. I'm not a speaker. You know, years and years ago, before I had to start doing public speaking, I was scared to death. Scared to death of public speaking. And I'm sure mostly everybody is to a degree. And I would physically get sick before I had to get up and speak before people. And you know, public speaking is, they say, the second biggest phobia of people. First being dying, you know. But anyways, how true that is, I don't know. But nevertheless, here's Moses. Educated man, had all these kind of things. Maybe those 40 years in the desert, he just was talking to himself and didn't know how to talk to people anymore. Whatever it was, here's Moses making one excuse after another. I can't speak. The Egyptians are going to kill me. Can't send me back there. The Egyptians are going to kill me. That was legit because they were going to kill him, I'm sure. And then he finally said, they won't listen to me. I mean, just one excuse after another. Don't we see that, you know? My mother would always say, the road to hell is paved with good excuses. You know, Mom, I can't do the lawn today. You know, I got to go to movies. And then we have Jonah, right? I mean, it keeps on going on and on. What did Jonah do? They won't listen to me. He said the same thing. And then bingo, he takes off for parts unknown. He split. And, you know, I think about Job. Job questioned God. And with the one thing with Job, I think it was just so correct. Job was under this influence that was just, he had lost everything, his family. I mean, terrible, terrible conditions. And he wanted to know, why? Why is this happening to me? His friends were telling him, you're a terrible sinner. That's what happens when you sin like that. And you must have done something wrong in your life, all these things. And so he was a terrible person, but you know, he wasn't. So he wanted to know why. Why, God? Why is this happening to me? So there's another man that questioned. And you know, finally, Mary. When the angel came to Mary and started telling these things, what did she say? How can these things be? You know, I'm a virgin. So questioning God is something that we see throughout the Bible, okay? So we're going to go down now. We're going to jump to verse 39. I'm sorry, we're jumping up. Where are we? Six. I'm sorry. Okay, 36 through 40. And now we hear about the fleece. Okay, we all know this story. Put out a fleece, see what God does. Okay, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that you will deliver Israel through me, as you have spoken. And it was so. When he arose early the next day and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a bowl full of water. So here we have Gideon testing God, okay? We know we shouldn't do that, don't we? When Satan tested Jesus, Jesus said, thou shalt not test the Lord your God, didn't he? Uh-huh. And so he says, God, you know, I'm just a little guy still. I've heard you. I'm listening to you. But I have this question, you know, and so he puts out this fleece. And the fleece was basically just a sheepskin. When I think of the fleece, I think of John the Baptist. He had this, whatever it was, goatskin thing around him all the time, girded his belt and that type of thing. So that's what it was. It was a fleece, you know, and he could sleep on it. You know, if he was out in the fields, they would sleep on it and what have you. So anyways, this happened. He said, okay, that's good, you know, but God. So we jumped down. He said, then Gideon said, 39, don't let your anger be burned against me. Don't get mad at me now. I have to do it. You know, the next morning, and he squeezed, and he said, don't let your anger burn against me that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test one more with the fleece. Once wasn't good enough, was it? Okay. And you know something? We know that God answered that prayer there. There wasn't a bolt of lightning that came down. He wasn't struck dead. He was still alive. To test one more with the fleece, let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all the ground. Okay, test number two. And God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on the ground. So what do we see here? Don't be angry with me. Once was not good enough. I've known people that put out fleeces. I mean, maybe some of you have, you know, sort of like, Lord, if this happens, I'll know to do this, stuff like that. I actually put out a fleece about this message, and God answered me. So I'm standing up here today. And I can't think of any other time I may have done that, but I don't think it's that bad. Okay, so we see what happened here now, where Gideon now knows God is with him. So what is he going to do now? What is he going to do about it? They still had this army camped down there in the fields. And we're going to jump down because there's a part here where it talks about he destroys the altars of Baal. And I don't want to go through that because that's a little bit different from the rest of them. Okay, I'm going to jump down to, we're going to start at verse, at chapter 7. 1-8. Then Jerubbaal, that is the name Gideon, Jerubbaal. A lot of times we see in the Old Testament when somebody comes to the Lord or what have you, like Abram became Abraham, Jacob became Israel. A lot of times names changed, okay? Gideon, that is Gideon. And all the people who were with him rose early and they camped beside the spring of Harod, and the camp of Midian was on the north side of them, and by the hill of Moriah in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many. I think he had 22,000 troops that he had assembled. They're too many. And he says, to give Midian into their hands, for Israel would become boastful, saying, my own power has delivered this. We read that before, where God said, wait a minute now. You know, I'm the one that's going to win this battle, not you, you know. And we, what I think about is very shortly before this was about Deborah and Barak. The Israelites were going out to war, and Deborah, they went to Deborah, a woman, for advice on how to do this. And Deborah, and they wanted Deborah to go into the battle with them, but she wouldn't because she said, no, if I go into the battle, they're going to say something like a woman defeated us or whatever the story may have been. Well, here's kind of the same story where God said, no, you're not going to go in there with 22,000 and defeat them and then say, wow, we're a great army. We're great. That's not going to happen. Okay, he says, the people with you are too many to give it to their hands, and they will boast and say, we've done this in our own power. Verse 3, now it says, now therefore come, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead. And it says, so 22,000 people returned, but 1,000 remained. So 12,000 people took off, went home. You know, they were afraid, or, you know, the Israelites would allow men that were just married. They didn't have to go off to war, stuff like that. And then it says, and then the Lord said to Gideon, verse 4, the people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them there. Therefore shall it be that whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. But everyone to whom I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So it says in verse 5, now so he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, you shall separate everyone who laps the water. In other words, they get down there like a dog, laps the water, and you will separate them from the people that kneel down to drink with the water. In other words, they kneel down and they cup their hands and they would cup the water. And somebody knows the difference why the Lord chose who he did. Good for you. I've read so many commentaries on it. Why not the one that lapped like the dog did he do versus the one that took it in his hands? The one that was lapping the dog was carefree or whatever the story may happen to be, but it's still interesting, you know, to read commentaries on it, okay? And then he said, now the number of those who lapped, putting their hands to their mouth, were 300 men, but all the rest of the people nailed to drink water. In other words, they lapped the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, verse 7, I will deliver you with the 300 men who lapped and will give the Midianites into your hands, so that all the other people go home, you know. So here we are again. It's a strange thing that he's asking. So we have here now an army of 300 going against this vast, powerful armies. Because it wasn't just the Midianites, remember that. It was also the Amalekites, and there was the people from the east. So you can just imagine this army that was just sitting down in this valley. But Gideon, you know, we don't hear anything more about Gideon being afraid or anybody being afraid. But Gideon then, what happens that night, okay. So it goes on in verse 8, he says, now, so the 300 men took the people's provisions and their trumpets into their hands, and Gideon sent to all the other men of Israel, each to his tent, let the rest go. But he retained the 300 of the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. So it says now, I call this the Lord spooks the Midianites. Now that same night it came about that the Lord said to Gideon, arise, go down into the camp and give it into your hands. I'm going to give it into your hands. Go down, sneak down into the camp. And he says, but if you are afraid to go down, take Purah your servant down with you. And he said, and you will hear what they say, and afterwards your hands will be strengthened that you may go down against the camp. So Gideon went with Purah, his servant, down into the outpost of the army that was in the camp. To remind you, these are down in the valley. They're all down in the valley. And now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in a valley as numerous as locusts. And their camels were with them without number and enormous. And as enormous as the sands of the sea. And when Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. And he said, behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley was tumbled into the camp of Midian, and it came to the camp and it struck it so that it fell and it turned it upside down and the tent lay flat. What does this dream mean? And his friend replied, this is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hands. So they were all spooked now. They were worried. Something was going to happen. Now we know the whole camp didn't know this because everybody else was still sleeping. I'm going to venture a guess to say this is like 12, 1 o'clock at night. So Gideon goes rushing back to camp, and it says, when Gideon heard the account of the dream and interpretation, he bowed and he worshiped God. And he returned to the camp and said to Israel, arise, for the Lord has given the land of the Midians into our hands. And he divided the 3 men into 3 companies, and this is what he did. Strange warfare here. God works in strange ways, his miracles to behold. I've read that somewhere. So here's this strange 300 ragtag army, Minutemen, let's call them kind of. The cream of the crop, though. And what does he do to prepare these 300 men against this vast army in the valley? He gives them a trumpet. Da-da. He gives them a lamp. Gives him a lamp. And he gives him this big jar. What kind of warfare is this, you know? And you know, if you, as I was reading this and thinking about it, I found out that this plan, as foolish as it may sound, is something that they study at like the Navy War College. The philosophy behind this, you know, find your enemy's weak spot, you know, where they were maybe superstitious or something like that, and then just scare them to death. Does anybody remember the Desert Storm? Desert Storm was a similar kind of battle where we just like overran everything, you know? But as we were preparing for the battle there, if you guys remember on CNN, we were hearing about the Red Brigade. This was, what was his name again now? Hussein's army. These were the elite of the elite. They would die for him. And what happened? when we blew up everything before we flew in there, we totally demoralized them, just like Gideon did with this guy speaking. And then we just went in and took over. So there's similarities here on what we could do. So as we go on, it says, so Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch. Now think about that, the middle watch. This is what happens here. It's 2:00 in the morning. Those guys that are just coming off a watch are dog tired. They've been up all night. Now it's their chance to go to sleep. I'm sure they laid down. Bingo, they were out. And then they get these other guys that are coming in to replace them. They've just been woken up. They're starry-eyed, and why did he do this? And why did they ever join the army? You know, that kind of thing. And it says, and it was the beginning of the middle watch when they had just posted the watch. And at that point, when these guys were all just, you know, dizzy here, he blew the trumpets. Can you imagine? 300 trumpets now, all at once from all around them. He blew the trumpets. And I can imagine everybody like, bing, their eyes opening up. And here we go. And he smashed the pitchers. What a terrible noise. It must have sounded like an army rushing down the mountains against them. And then they lit the candles, the lanterns. There was only 300 lanterns, but they looked up. They were all over the place. They didn't know what to do. And what happens, what they say here, and it says that when the three companies blew the trumpet and broke the pitchers, they held the torches to their left hand and the trumpets in their right hand for blowing. And it said, a word for the Lord and for Gideon. And it goes on to just say it, and they just stood in their place. Meanwhile, those people down in the valley, what's going on here? It's pitch dark. What's going on here? They started picking up their knives, killing each other, and it was just chaos to them. So anyways, it says that at that point then, it says, when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army, and the army fled as far as Beth Shittim, towards Zarapha, as far as the edge of Abel Meholah. Too bad there's not translations into English, you know. From all the way from New Milford to Brookfield and down to Norwalk. We don't have that kind of thing. So we see this strategy, this simple strategy that Gideon had done, and we see this little ragtag army of 300 men defeat this overwhelming army. And Gideon, if we read about that later, if you read about Gideon from there on, we find out that he was a judge. They made him a judge. He was a judge over Israel, and he led them, and he got rid of a lot of their false idols and stuff like that, and they once again were living in peace in their land, and they were at peace again for a period of time, and then we know this is a reoccurring story, even up to the day of Jesus. So, kind of summarize the thing. Throughout Israel history, whenever they've wandered, whenever they've walked away, whenever they cried out, and you'll see this over and over and over again, God hears them. He'll say something, the cries of my people have come up to me. Israel was then in 400 years in Egypt. They were under total bondage, terrible bondage. They were slaves of slaves, so to speak. But yet, at some point, and they had even forgotten God's name. Because remember where Moses? Who am I going to tell him? Who am I going to tell him? What's your name? They'd even forgotten God's name. They only knew that they were Hebrews. That's all that they knew. But yet that day came that God said, okay, it's time now. I'm going to bring my people up into the land of milk and honey. And he did that. And we see that at Gideon's time again. We see that. And it just goes on and on and on. And even with us Christians, you know, we know you run away, you're not going to get very far. You run away from the Lord, you're not going to get very far, right? Didn't Jesus say that, you know, one sheep, we've all probably at one point in our life been that sheep that took off and ran away, right? Like the pastor likes to talk about the prodigal son. But God, you know, in his mercy always is there when we cry out to him. And that's just what I love so much about that is even with us to this day, you know, and we have this wonderful love, this love note from God to us that just tells us over and over again how much God loves us, how much he cares for us, how much the worse we are, the better he is, so to speak, it seems sometimes. You know, where Paul says, should I sin more so grace more abounds? No, we shouldn't. But, you know, God's grace is just immeasurable beyond our comprehension as human beings. We all know how to hate, how to be mad at somebody, how to ignore somebody because I don't like you, that type of thing. But with God, he may get angry, but he still loves us. So this is this is what we see with Gideon, a little weak person. And these people that finally said, Lord, help us, all these promises that you had given to us. And now it came to pass. So kind of what I wanted to do, and it won't be much longer, folks. What I wanted to do is I want to tell you about the Gideons, which are named after our friend Gideon here, Jerubbaal. And this is the story of them is very simple. About 1890, there were these two traveling salesmen. Now, this isn't the Dirty Joke or anything like that. There were these two traveling salesmen, and it was in Minnesota. And they would meet regularly at this, not a Holiday Inn, but in those days, these guest houses and stuff like that. And they all had, you know, these rooms, waiting rooms downstairs that they would check in, and they'd go to their room, and then they'd come down, they could read something. A lot of times they were being fed. And these two fellas used to meet on a regular basis. And they decided, well, they're both Christians. Let's get together when we're in town and have a Bible study. So the story goes, I don't know how true it is, that they started reading the book of Gideon, okay? But so they would have this, and then a third person joined them. And at that point, they decided, you know, when we're in any one of these places, let's leave a Bible on the front desk. And that's how it started. So that was 1890, whatever that is, many, many, many years ago. And where are they today? You know? So the Gideons, there were about 260,000, which sounds like a lot, Gideon men and women. And they place each year at least, because these my notes here are a little old, at least 6 million Bibles worldwide. 6 million Bibles worldwide. They're in, I think, about 110 different countries. They have 98 different Bibles, interpretations of the Bibles that they hand out, 90 different languages. And, you know, just to tell you how popular they are, let's play Jeopardy. Uh-huh. Jeopardy, the category is the Beatles. Okay. And the Beatles in their song Rocky Raccoon checks into a room. And what did he find? A Gideon Bible. Okay. You didn't know that, did you? No, I know you didn't. Yeah. I always thought that was kind of a good joke, you know? So anyways, but did you say what is a Gideon Bible? Oh, you just said Gideon Bible. Brr. Wrong. You got to answer the question with a question. Jeopardy. Okay. Well, I remember years ago when I used to do a lot of traveling, I would go into a hotel, you know, and board, you know, I'd open the door and I'd take out a Gideon Bible and I'd go like that. And, well, whatever it would say, this one I don't know because this is Le Nouveau Testament, whatever. We have two up here. One is one language I don't even know. Maybe Joe, I'm not sure if that's Chinese. It could be Chinese or Korean, or maybe you can tell me, Joe or Candace, what it might be. So anyways, all these Bibles that are put out there, and that's what I would do. You know, and it was so amazing because sometimes you'd open them, you'd flip through them, or they would be opened on the little side table, and invariably it would always be John 3:16. Some God-fearing, wonderful housemaid or whatever, you know, would do that. in the good old days. So it was always a wonderful thing. So some of the testimonies, as I became involved in the Gideon, some of the testimonies I just thought were so astonishing. But I just, before I start talking about that, I want to just say, the Gideons here in New Milford, we call it the camp. We call it a camp, like Gideon's camp of 300 men, you know, 300 men that don't lap the water or whatever. But whatever we do, you know, we meet on a weekly basis on Saturday mornings. And pretty much every single hotel and motel or what have you in Danbury, and there's a couple places in New Milford where they're not, have a Gideon Bible. And roughly every 5 years we go through, we replace them. The Gideon Bibles that are maybe 5-6 years old, some are in really beautiful shape, hardly been opened. Others you see kids scribbling in them, and others you can tell have been read quite a bit. You'll see, you'll find notes in them, things like that. They'll replace them out. So it's kind of like an ongoing thing. But like I said, most hospitals, at one point years ago, we were allowed to put them in rooms. We're not allowed to do that anymore, but we can leave them in like the chapel, in the where they have the little family rooms at the end of the hallways in the different sections of the hospital. We're allowed to leave them there. And so schools and colleges, up until 3 years ago, we would go every fall when the new class came into Westcon over on actually both campuses in Danbury, the western one and then also right downtown. And we would hand out generally up to 2,000 little testaments. And generally, we would give them something like this, and, you know, we would hand them out. People would take them. On a couple of occasions, you'd see somebody take when they'd walk 15 feet and dump it in the garbage. But, you know, that's what he expected. We had one guy complain, and which got us thrown off the campus because one of the workers that were with us doing it said something about, you're going to go to hell to a person, which I don't know why they would do that. But nevertheless, so we're not allowed on that campus anymore, but there's been a change in administration. So, and we know more and more that you just can't do these things. So we can stand out on White Street and still do it, or stand at the entranceway to the Western campus there and do it. Prisons, we routinely give our Bibles to prisons. Oddly enough, when we give a Gideon Bible, we have to tear the hard cover off. I don't know, maybe they can make a knife out of it or something. But we give hundreds and hundreds of Gideon Bibles into prisons. Street corners, we have a yearly blitz. We go into New York City, hand thousands of them out. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of people that have Gideon Bibles. This little Gideon Bible that was given out has saved some lives. Or turned a sorrowful soul around. We know we've read about people have gone into hotels and motels and planning to kill themselves, pick up a Gideon Bible, and it's changed their lives, and they've written and tell us about it, thousands and thousands of testimonies. But one that I like the best is it was a guy who was called the 44 caliber killer. Think about that, the 44 caliber killer. And he went by the name Son of Sam. Anybody remember that? 1976, 78, New York City, Brooklyn, parts of Long Island. There was this guy, David Berkowitz was his name. And he would go around. I don't know exactly how many people he killed. I'm just trying to think if I have it written here. He would go around. He had this 44 caliber bullet gun. And he would go around to these areas, lovers' lanes, and he would kill the people. I think he killed like 7 people. One of them is to this day a paraplegic. Another one is blind. And he would do this because his neighbor's dog, which was always barking, was telling him to. And that was Sam, was the dog. He was the son of Sam. So this guy had been brought up. He was Jewish. Oh, he doesn't know what he was, I'm sorry. But he was brought up by these Jewish people, hence Berkowitz, and he tried everything. It wasn't a happy childhood for him, I guess, for whatever, though his parents seemed to have been okay. He tried everything. Satanism, you know, spiritualism. He tried God. He tried all these different things, but eventually it led him to where he became the son of Sam, killing all these people. Well, he was caught. They caught him. And if you remember back in those days, if you saw the newspaper, here he was in his police car, just with a big smile on his face. He was like, wow, I got caught. Wow, look at me. I'm famous now. So he was really a screwball. He gets sent up to a prison over in New York. And a couple of guys come along, witness to him, things like that. But one day, where are we? Oh, he tried to commit suicide twice. He had a Gideon Bible. And it says, one day he opened this Gideon Bible and he began to read. And when he read through Psalm 44 and came to verse 6, he began to cry. And this really touches me. And this is what he read. The poor man cried out, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The power of those few words just totally changed this sick mind, not only a killer, but this sick mind, into who has now become an emissary for Christ. He doesn't want to get out of prison. He realizes he's done everything wrong. He's begged for forgiveness. He feels he's got God's forgiveness. He's done a terrible thing. And he runs a ministry there. He has a daily newsletter. He counsels other people in the prison. All because of a little Gideon Bible. So, as a Gideon, that really encourages us. Because, you know, you see these Bibles and they come back to us as we collect them. They're in, like, perfect shape. And you wonder, is this any good? What are we doing? We handed out 2,000 little testaments and Westcon campus, have they done any good? But over and over again, you hear these stories. Another one was a girl by the name of Mary Kay Beard. I don't know if any of you heard of her. This was like back in the 70s also. She was on the FBI's most wanted list. Her and her husband were notorious safe crackers and robbers. They got caught and they were sentenced to prison. She found a Bible placed by the Gideons. She hid it under her mattress and would read it whenever she had a chance. And I say here, God was working on her heart. And one day she was drawn to Ezekiel 36 and read, a new heart will I give you and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will take the old stony heart of your flesh. And she said that night she laid down, she kneeled down, and she prayed for God to forgive her all she had done. And this same person, Mary Kay Beard, concerned for prisoners, started the Angel Tree Ministry. So from a notorious robber, from a notorious killer, God is able to just pick these people up, wherever they are, down in the gutter, wherever they may be, and save them where they go on to do another work. So I'm going to end it with that. And I just wanted to tell you a few other things that I have up here. First of all, I have this. It's called The Life Book. And this is for teenagers. I was going to say kids. This is for you teenagers, youngsters, wherever you are. And what it basically is, it's a wonderful book. It's got a condensed Old Testament, then it has a New Testament, a book of John. And what it is, it's as if you were reading it and you had a question. So they have all these different verses about, you know, the kingdom of heaven, and then they'll sit on there, what is the kingdom of heaven? Kind of things, like if you were witnessing to somebody and said the kingdom of heaven, they would say, well, what is the kingdom of heaven? So it's all that type of thing, and it's wonderful. So I want each one of you girls to take one. Take them for your sisters and brothers, too. And we have all these little testaments here. I want to show you this one here, which I like so much. This is the military one. I gave one of these to each of my grandsons when they went into service, two Marines, one Army guy, one Army man. And how many veterans do we have here, by the way? Oh. You a veteran? You're a veteran. You don't raise your hand? Oh, you did? Okay. So what we did with these, I bought a whole box of them. I think it was like 90 of them. And they were like $2 a piece or whatever it was, 50. And whenever I would go to the airport, I would always take two or three with me. And if I saw somebody at the airport, I would hand them out and just say, thank you. Here's a little gift for you. Thank you. They all took them and they all appreciated them. So that's kind of it. You're welcome to come up here. I wanted to just show the last thing here is we have this. You may have seen these things. before our churches. It's a Gideon card rack. And what we have here are different cards for different purposes. One could be like encouragement here. We're praying for you. Another one might be in sympathy. And then there's one for in memorial. And what they do is when you take one of these cards, let's just say, you know, somebody that recently died. Having been brought up a Catholic, I knew all the, you know, the what do they call those things, the mass cards. That was just such an easy way. You know, $25, you got a mass card. These nuns are going to play for that person forever and ever. So they say, and they're going to read the name in church and pray for them. But these cards kind of like take that place. And what's so nice about them is it's a donation that is made to buy future Bibles for the Gideon Society. And it says in memory of blah, 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 so many of these Bibles have been placed in memory of Joe Bruschetti or whatever it happens to be, or I'm praying for you. Somebody's going through a tough time. Maybe they even lost somebody. So I'm going to try and get a whole bunch of them and have them on hand, but I encourage you to just take a look at them. If there's a reason you need one right now, you can think of somebody that might want them, take it. Feel free to take it. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There are so many of them. We have one. It's for patrol officers, for cops. We have another one for businessmen. We have another one for firemen. And, of course, the military one where they and on the front of each one of these, there's all these verses. You know, if you're feeling anxiety, you're feeling sorry or whatever you may happen to be, you're seeking, whatever may happen to be, where you can go to in the Bible and get those kind of verses to encourage yourself. So I want to encourage you to take a look afterwards at this, and I guess I'm done. So but one thing I wanted to do, when we Gideons get together, when we leave for the day, we all join hands and we sing this song called Blessed Be the Tides That Bind. So I'd like us all to do that. You should have one with you.